The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Kumpulan Wang Persaraan Diperbadankan, or KUAP, needs to grow and fast. Right now, Malaysia's second largest pension fund has zero liabilities, but has to eventually assume part of the civil service pension payouts. Will KUAP have enough money for such a task, or have they been set up for a mission impossible? This morning on The Breakfast Grill, we are pleased to welcome KUAP CEO, Dato' Wan Kamaruzaman Wan Ahmad. Good morning, Dato', and welcome to The Breakfast Grill.
Thank you for having me here, Han.
Dato', you had 125 billion ringgit in assets under management as of end 2016. Here we are, end of 2017. What's that tally right now?
Okay, as at end September, which is the third quarter of this year, our fund size has grew to 137 billion. So we are growing still double digits, you know, but the bulk of the growth comes from investment incomes. And this year's investment income has been quite robust. We hope to achieve 7 plus billion as compared to previous year, which is short of 7 billion. Generally, that's where the fund size growth is. From the contribution side, it's only growing by about 3.5 billion per annum. But again, you know, it's a challenge to realize incomes these days because of the low interest rate environment and the new normals where returns are also averaging much lower than previously.
137 billion, still a long ways off from the 300 billion ringgit that's estimated to be the government's total pension liabilities, right? How are you going to get there? You got to more than double what you have right now.
Yeah. No, I think it has to work from both sides, not just via the investment income. I think there's also the government part that needs to increase its contributions, plus the statutory bodies. But knowing where the current position is, I guess, you know, we have to do with the investment income only at this point of time. Yes, I think in fact, we did a liability study, actually. We undertook a liability study this year. And I think the liability has grown even bigger, actually. So currently, probably we are underfunded by quite a substantial amount still. So it's a long way before we can undertake the entire pension liability. But generally, what we can do is that there is a formula to it. We can take on a gradual basis. And that has also been discussed at the highest level at this point of time.
All right, gradual. So what would be the AUM goal for 2018?
2018, actually, we are targeted to achieve AUM of 150 billion. That is the hard number that's given by our board to achieve. And I think this is not impossible because we felt that the market can be also very good, looks very stable at this point of time. And 150 billion fund size together with the growth in investment income of closer towards 8 billion, we think we can achieve that number.
And you think you're going to achieve that number just from investment income, or can the, like you mentioned earlier, the federal government and the other statutory bodies start contributing more? Because we note that in recent years, it was like 1.5 billion ringgit per year that the federal government contributed. That fell to like about 500 million, less than 500 million the last couple of years. But, you know, given that the Malaysian economy is chugging along well enough, oil prices are going up, is it high time that the federal government goes back to that 1.5 billion ringgit?
Yeah. We've been in constant in engagement with the federal government.
And what did they say?
Yeah, I think the thing is that obviously it depends on the budget situation. Yes, I think next year is looking good with petroleum prices hovering between 50 to 60 and commodity prices like palm oil also looking well. So if they are receptive to our request, I think we'll be able to get more from the federal government just as compared to previously of just around 500 million ringgit.
Let's consider the idea of KUAP eventually taking over the government's pension liabilities, because that appears to become much more distant when the goalposts that keeps getting moved, right? For example, next year, under Budget 2018, the new minimum pension has been set at 1,000 ringgit per month. That's an increase of 50 ringgit or 5.26% to be exact from the previous minimum pension. So how are you able to keep up if those goalposts keep getting moved?
I think we have been constantly, again, in engagement with the government, not just at Ministry of Finance. We are also other ministries involved, actually. So generally, what we felt that, you know, anything that the government wants to decide upon, which has impact on Co-op, we need to be engaged, actually. We need to give our input to the government. And I think this is where I think the collaborations between us and the various government agencies is very important. Yes, we are trying to meet that liability expectations of the government. But like I said, you know, there is a formula to it. And I think the formula can still be refined so that we can able to undertake pension liability from a certain, probably when we reach a fund size of 200 billion. And from there, we can continue to provide that liability as well as grow our fund size still.
And what is that formula? Is it further diversification into riskier assets, higher returns?
I think our risk appetite has not changed. I think we have refined our risk appetite, which is actually moderate, but we are very clear in what we can do and what we cannot do. For instance, of late, recently, we have started investing in tech companies, you know, but we are very clear that we can invest in tech companies that requires funding from the B series onwards. So those are the kinds of risk appetite that we can do. The rest remains the same, actually. But even though it seems that we do we are taking a little bit more risk, but it is within the risk that has been clearly defined upon by our board and investment panel.
And we'll get more into your investments in the tech sector, for example, Uber, in just a bit. Now, going back to the idea of the goalposts being moved, you just mentioned that the fund size target is 200 billion ringgit. Mm. Previously, last year, you were saying that it was at 150 billion ringgit. That's when Co-op can start assuming some of those pension liabilities, right?
Yep.
So are you having to, again, push back that goal given the growing pension liabilities that the government has?
Yeah. No, again, like I said, we did a liability study and the liability has grown. Based on that, we felt that 200 billion now is probably the right fund size for us to assume a portion of the liability on a gradual basis. The liability study reflects our new targeted fund size.
And when do you hope to hit that 200 billion ringgit fund size?
Yeah, growing at about 11-12% per annum. I think we will hit the fund size of 200 billion in year 2021. We should be able to hit 200 billion.
So the days of 7% growth in your fund size, I think you saw that in 2015, 2016, those days are firmly in the past?
Yes. I think, we are growing faster, and obviously if the federal government supports with a little bit more additional funding, we can even grow it faster.
So, Dato, should the conversation then be about moving some of the burden to the civil servants themselves? So instead of defined benefits, it should be more about defined contributions a la EPF.
Exactly.
Has that discussion been going on between you and the federal government?
Not exactly, but I think it's the decision of the federal government. We know that at that level, there has been discussions, but we really leave up to them because I think we are just a facilitator or an administrator of the pension. Policy decisions are still decided by the federal government. I've learned a little bit of lessons that, that's the federal government decision. Don't dabble with it.
But you're tasked with this seemingly impossible task, though.
Yeah.
So I'm sure they can see it where the numbers are just increasingly beyond reach, or at least it appears to be that way, right? So have they given you any kind of additional support?
Support has been very forthcoming. I think they do understand our objective of setting Co-op and taking over the pension liability. But again, I think the government has their own considerations. And if the situation looks brighter and more positive, I'm sure the federal government will come and support what is needed for Co-op to take over that pension liability.
This is more about political risk more so than the actual finances, right?
Yeah, that's why the government really needs a strong mandate to push these kinds of reform. It is needed, But let's, brush that aside. And I think let's leave it to the federal government to make that decision.
All right. So moving on, Dato, how do you think Co-op's investments have fared this year?
This year has been great, even though we could have done a lot better, you know. For the first time in 4 years, you know, after 3 years of negative performance, Bursa Malaysia turned out positive, but generally very marginal, about 4+% at this point of time. Even though that positiveness came about, but actually the Bursa Malaysia is one of the lagging markets among the region. But generally, like I said, we are pleased with any positive performance. And due to that, I think we are able to rake in probably our target is about 5.5% for the next few more days to achieve for this financial year. But I think we are on target to achieve that number.
40% of your investments are in equities, right?
Yes, yes.
And that number will stay constant for the time being, or any more tweaks to that allocation?
Yeah. Next year is our asset allocation review. It's actually not due yet, but we wanted to review it because of the constraints of us investing abroad. And because of that, the asset allocation has been, you know, temporarily managed differently. You know, so we felt that we have to reflect the reality of the difficulty in getting our investments overseas. So we will revise our asset allocations. And at the moment, I think equity will not change very much. It will probably remain in 40%, around that 40% range, but plus minus probably 2%.
Okay. And I assume that given the ringgit has gained almost 9% in the first 11 months of the year, that is pushing your bid to venture further abroad?
Yeah, I think
it's a good time to go back out, right?
Yeah, correct. Provided we can get that approvals and approvals to take our money outside. But at the same time, we are doing innovative stuff like leveraging from our investment overseas and getting the money and reinvesting the money overseas, actually. So our overseas investments at this point of time is about 12% of our asset allocation, or about 16.5 billion, you know. And we've been openly saying that we wanted to continue to invest abroad because the performance of our overseas investments has proven to be far superior than the domestic investments. For instance, the last four or five years, I think overseas investments has given us returns of slightly more than 10%, whereas the domestic returns is just about 5%. So that reflects the superiority of our overseas investments if you choose your investment carefully.
Looking at the property space alone, you're invested in Australia, the UK, Germany. So when you say invest abroad, are you saying property? Are you saying equities? Or where's the bias here?
I think what we did this year was we started investing in the US market on the listed equity. And that has proven to be correct despite market calling that it was very inflated and, you know, a bubble could have performed. But yeah, at 22,000, now it's close to 24,000. It has performed well. In terms of real estate, yes, we do like the real estate market, but unfortunately, UK, the returns are sub 5%. So we are find it difficult to justify putting more investments into the UK real estate market. Australia has still showing above 5%. And recently, we also has increased our investments in Australia by buying equities stake in a property that we have not owned. There was one property in Melbourne that we own only 60% of the property. Now we are owning, subject to the approvals, we will own 100% of that property.
Fixed income, not so much a flavor today.
Yeah, no. I think fixed income, generally, you know, if, despite the hike in US interest rates, I think what is key, obviously, is not the hike, it's actually the pace of the hike, you know. And I think the pace of the hike will continue to be slow. And for that reason, we're still not looking at global fixed income at this point of time, whereas the Malaysian bond market is looking still very attractive to us.
Coming up in just a bit, we'll look at some of your alternative investments and whether or not you'll consider cryptocurrencies and the like. That's coming up right here on The Breakfast Grill. I'm speaking to Dato' Wan Kamaruzaman Wan Ahmad, CEO of Kuap.
You are listening to The BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Thanks for staying with us here on The Breakfast Grill. I'm Tan Chung Han, and with me in the studio is Dato' Wan Kamaruzaman Wan Ahmad, CEO of Kuap, Malaysia's second largest pension fund. Now, so far this year, Bitcoin has gained about 1,700%. Dato, so what's your take on cryptocurrencies right now?
Oh, how I wish I have put my money on cryptocurrencies.
Don't we all, right?
Yeah. But unfortunately, it's not something that, you know, we can take as our risk is much on a moderate scale, you know. So we are not invested in cryptocurrency, but we do. I do personally monitor the movement of the Bitcoin trends, you know. And everyone keeps saying that, you know, it's already high, a bubble, you know, and it keeps reaching new highs. But I guess, you know, every new asset class, when it's, you know, something that people, investors are seeking, you know, and obviously that kind of run-ups is quite normal to me, you know. But like I said, you know, as an institutional investors, you know, we want something more stable. We are looking for returns of just slightly above double digits, you know, not in the thousands of percent. Yeah, we definitely are not invested in those kinds of investments.
But here's the thing, Quap needs a shot in the arm, right, in order to match the government's pension liabilities. Mm. Now, on top of that, in all seriousness, you've got here in Malaysia, Bank Negara and the Securities Commission, they are coming up with a regulatory framework, right? In the US, Bitcoin futures, those are starting to get traded this month, right? So as Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies move closer towards the mainstream, can Quap still afford to ignore cryptocurrencies? Like, are you saying right now, 100% never cryptocurrencies?
Yeah. I think I would agree to that statement that we will not even look at cryptocurrencies. We don't have that kind of a risk appetite. And furthermore, I think the trouble is that it has to have a lot of liquidity and that kind of volatility reflects lack of liquidity, and we are not into those kinds of asset classes.
All right, on to another asset class in your alternative investments. Mm-hmm. So Quap invested $30 million into Uber, your first direct investment in a foreign company. Mm. But given the turmoils at Uber right this year, what's your current stance on Uber?
Yeah, we still remain happy with our investments. What happened was that, you know, they have a lot of negative headline news. But, you know, as an investor, we still look at the viability of the company itself and the long-term prospects. And what has happened is that recently SoftBank has purchased a substantial interest in Uber with a 30% discount. Initial valuations was closer towards $70 billion, but with a 30% discount, they have obtained it at $48 billion. But that still reflects that our investments are in the money. We invested in Uber at $61.5 billion market cap at that point of time, you know. But unfortunately, $30 million does not qualify us to get any discount, unlike SoftBank. Yeah. So that's the situation. We're still very happy with our investment. But of course, we are monitoring the headline issues and the risk of that investment.
You say headline issues. You know, these are boycotts, lawsuits, criminal probes, top execs leaving the company, data breach. Then on top of that, a ransom paid to cover that data breach. Does all that fit Quap's risk parameters?
No, like I said, we have tabled this, and we have, made a decision that is still within the risk parameters. Like I said, you know, our risk appetite is moderate, and for investments like that, we can take from the B series. So Uber, that was a G series funding, so well above the B series, that minimum funding that we can participate in. So it still meets, and of course, there are other criteria that we look at. Yes, it did meet our criteria, but I think what happened is that there is so much investments in this tech space, and institutional investors like us cannot ignore that fact. Of course, you have to choose it wisely. You know, for us, I think what we did was that we spent 2 years evaluating tech companies. We trained our people, and after that kind of program training, you know, we decided to put some money, and $30 million is just like a test in the water. Yeah, of course, we have a steep learning curve for that. And after Uber, we have invested in 2 more venture cap funds, you know. So we are trying to have a foot into investments in the tech space. Yes, I think we are treating it with cautions, but I think going forward, that is where we want to have a bigger exposure.
You're just waiting for that Uber IPO, aren't you?
Yeah. Don't be surprised that, you know, despite You see, Uber is plagued with headline risk. That's because I think its legacy, probably, you know. But generally, many others have probably the same or equally numerous issues, but they didn't get that kind of headline. You know? I guess it's like, you know, a nice punching bag for, news media to look at Uber under that current situation. But as a long-term investor, we would like to see how the investments turn out, and we were willing to write upon it, actually.
So why Uber and not Grab then?
Okay, simple. Uber came to us first, and unfortunately, we do like Grab as well, but there is a non-competing clause, and because of that, you already invested in Uber. You can't invest in a competitor of Uber, which is Grab. So we are only invested in Uber.
Now, you speak about plenty of money being plowed into the tech space. You spoke about your further investments into a couple of VCs. What other investment deals are you eyeing in the tech sector?
Okay, recently, the government has announced a venture cap funding program of about R1 billion, actually. We are working closely with the regulator, which is Securities Commission. We've made a certain commitment of about $350 million out of that $1 billion. And hopefully we can get the companies, the correct companies, and, you know, not just tech, but also part of the biotech or other brick-and-mortar companies to get into that funding for to get into the funding for that $350 million, which we are willing to put aside. But hopefully, I think those companies can grow and become not just local champions, but also regional and global champions. We are still collaborating with the regulator to look at how we can fund that $350 million. Mm.
From what I gather, the allocation from your funds for alternative investments, that's about 14%. Mm. Now, you are saying that you're going to bring forward your next allocation review. That's for next year, because I think initially it was only slated for 2019,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
So come next year, can we expect a higher allocation for these alternative investments?
Yes, I think we do like the alternative space, especially in real estate. But we do have a challenge in taking the money out and invest overseas. So we probably rejig that allocation within the overall 14 or higher percentage. You know, we probably will have to rejig between what is domestic and what is international or global. You know, and then the space of private equity and infrastructure, we might add one or two more asset class within the alternative space. But I think the difference will not be that significant. Probably 2 percentage points will probably be what it will be likely, you know, a higher by 2 percentage points from the 14% that we have currently.
So it could go up to 16?
Yes, correct. Mm.
Now, coming up in just a bit, we will further discuss your other asset classes that you're invested in. Mm. I'm speaking to Dato' Wan Kamaruzaman Wan Ahmad, CEO of Quap, and you're tuned in to The Breakfast Grill right here on BFM 89.9. Stay tuned.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Thanks for staying with us on this extended version of the Breakfast Grill. Today we have Dato' Wan Kamaruzaman Wan Ahmad, CEO of Quap. Now, Dato', 2017 also saw further forays by Quap into the property sector here in Malaysia, right? Mm. You're even setting up a property development arm.
Yes.
Yet, in recent weeks, the numbers from Bank Negara and other industry groups are just screaming over supply. Mm-hmm. What's your appetite now for property?
Actually, based on the asset allocation, our investments in the property space, domestic market in particular, we are still well short of our target. At the moment, we only have two buildings, which is Integra Tower and Cap Square Tower. We have a few pieces of land, two small pieces of land in the Golden Triangle area in KL, and one big investment in reclaimed land, which is Sri Tanjung Pinang 2A in Penang, actually.
That's with ENO, right?
Yeah, ENO. Mm. So the the underinvestment is still quite significant, so we still have a lot of room. Yes, we do take note of the situation of oversupply that has been highlighted by the regulator. But generally, I think property, it's a very niche market. We know some certain areas that is still demand for it, especially Penang. I just came back from Penang, and the outlook there is still pretty strong for a place which is an island. Land is limited. So if you have land, I think it's very valuable. And generally, we still feel that, you know, demand in Penang can still, remain buoyant with a lot of foreign investors coming in. Mm. And I think there are some project developments that we can start collaborating with ENO to launch, you know, based on the land, which is about 100 and close to 170 acres of land that we own of Sri Tanjung Pinang.
Granted, mm-hmm. from mm-hmm. Co-op's point of view, you mm-hmm. are underinvested, but mm-hmm. there is an oversupply out there. Mm-hmm. By setting up a property development arm, mm-hmm. won't Co-op just be adding to the problem?
Yes. like I said, you know, we felt that there is, certain areas that is still demand for it. And we will look carefully because, for instance, our two pieces of land in KLCC, we did a market study, and the market study reflects the oversupply, obviously, and we have put it on hold to develop the land, you know. But we don't like land banking very much from what we have currently. But the idea is to look at certain locations only, and there are a couple of other opportunities that we are looking at, you know. But we are looking at, you know, land that we can launch quickly and make our returns, but not the type where, you know, you do land banking, which will probably not earn much returns out of it.
Are you looking at residential, office, commercial, retail? What kind of properties are we talking about here?
We're still interested in the office space, actually. We felt that certain areas might be the one that could gain traction. For instance, TRX area is still something that we do like because of the centrality and the location, which is well connected with good underground and public transports as well.
Now, it's interesting that you say offices because I'm looking at Bank Negara's report right now, and the numbers are not pretty, though. You know, so they already see an incoming supply of 38 million square feet of office space. Okay, these are levels that are far surpassing what was recorded during the Asian financial crisis. Mm-hmm. Yet, Co-op still wants to go into the office space.
Like I said, you know, I think it's all about location. And location, we felt that, you know, there are certain areas that will probably be more favorable than others. And locations like, you know, which is like the transport-oriented development, which is close to public transport area, will probably get a lot of attention and demand, actually. And those are the kinds of areas that we are looking at this point of time.
All right, let's move on to equities then. Now, you, PNB and also Khazanah, you are all shareholders in this entity called ValueCap, the company that's tasked with investing in local equities. Now we hear that there's a restructuring at ValueCap. Mm-hmm. What's going on?
Mm-hmm. Okay, a little bit sensitive, yeah, but I try to answer as much as I can, you know. Yeah, I think what we did was we've lost a couple of key personnel in ValueCap. But ValueCap, even though the program funding is 20 billion, at the moment is funded by the three of us for up to 6 billion at this point of time, 2 billion each only. Yes, I think the issue with ValueCap is actually, you know, previously it was set up, you know, on a market where it was really has gone through a steep corrections. But recently, this recent ValueCap funding came in at a market when the market did not really drop that much. So I think the market, you know, as you know, the last 3 years only dropped by about 13% or something like that, you know. So without that kind of drop, I think it was supposed to be a stabilizer, you know. The role is completely different now, actually. And I think ValueCap is struggling with that new role that it's supposed to fill up. Because, you see, what happened was that institutional investors like EPF, ourselves, PNB, has grown bigger. you know, EPF, 770 billion, Co-op, 137 billion, you know. And what is value cap? Even if it's fully funded, 20 billion, it is small as to the overall size of the institutional investors itself. So it really has to find its niche area. And I think that's where the restructuring is coming from. I think we are looking at how to look at providing the role of value cap to the most effective manner. And I think it is still ongoing and still going through that process. Let me go through the process and maybe I will revert back to you. But right now, it's still work in progress.
But what is the new role, the new mandate? What's the end goal then for this restructuring? What are you shaping them to become?
No, I think what we do want them to play that role of buying into value companies.
So still in equities?
Yeah, still okay. In equity. But at the same time, we also want them to develop that expertise into managing third-party mandates. It's not just managing shareholders' money because they have a good track record. They have done very well. So they can also out get money from other clients, not just from just shareholders. So that's one area we're trying to develop the expertise. But generally, the other one that we are looking at is actually, trigger points of, the shareholders' funding value cap, So maybe when the market drops certain percentage, only we do fund, the program is already there, that 20 billion program is already there. So only when it reaches certain trigger points, then the funding comes in, not when the market is just as per normal like it is today right now.
So what I'm gathering is perhaps some outsourcing of value cap services beyond the three shareholders.
Yes, correct. Mm.
Okay. Any updates to your attempts to buy a stake in a foreign-owned insurance company here in Malaysia? Because you have obtained Bank Negara's approval to talk to Prudential and Great Eastern, right? Mm-hmm. Any updates there?
It's difficult to give more than what you have mentioned because it will jeopardize my position as, to bargain on the pricing of the two insurance companies. Yes, all I can say is that we have got that approval to talk to Prudential and Great Eastern. It's progressing very well right at this point of time. I think by the end of the year, some of them might have to put in a firm offer to the central bank, But as at today, I cannot vouch more or tell you more because it's still negotiating. And the more if I tell, the more I will compromise and co-op's positions to bargain for a better pricing.
Sure. Fair enough. I can certainly appreciate the position that you're in right now. Mm. But talk to us about the rationale for such a move then, because here on The Breakfast Grill, we speak to many foreign-owned insurance companies operating here in Malaysia. Okay. And they say that, hey, we bring with us this huge amount of funds. Mm. We can better diversify the risk across the global stage. Mm. So by taking up a stake in these companies, what value add does Co-op or any other institutional investor bring?
Oh, they fail to see that, first thing is that Co-op stakeholders is 1.6 million civil servants and nearly 700,000 pensioners. That's 2.3 million stakeholders. So whoever we partner with or we buy a stake, you're looking at, a potential client of that many, So there's also value propositions on our part. Equally, EPF probably will have 7 million active contributors, and that's also potential, clients of the insurance companies, So we do have some value propositions to them. But the thing is that for Co-op, all I can say is that we want to just be a financial investor. We don't want to take controlling stakes. Even 30% stakes is actually too big for Co-op to take in any one particular insurance company. Normally, we have invested in a few listed companies up to a maximum of 20%. And I think that is our appetite at this point of time. So we are not even thinking of taking the full 30% because it is too big a stake for us, actually.
So you're probably going to divvy out that 30% stake.
Correct.
Okay, got it. What's your outlook on the Malaysian economy as a whole for 2018? And you'll tie in your outlook for monetary policy, the ringgit?
See, I'm quite confident that, the last three quarters has been very good for this year, And probably the average growth rate of 5.9% GDP. But a lot of people seems to think her negatively that next year will be a slower year. But the momentum has been very, very strong for the GDP numbers, you know. And I, like I said, I just came back from Penang and I visited a few of my investee companies, you know, and they are all getting very good orders from abroad, and they have performed very well and have record quarters after quarters.
I'm guessing these are E&E and semiconductor guys you're talking about?
Yes, correct, yeah. correct, you know. So the thing is that, you know, people are thinking that GDP growth will probably slow down to 5.2% just based on the average analysis. But I think it will be stronger. And for that reason, that is why I still predict that the economy will continue to grow at probably above 5.5%. And for that reason, the equity market will do well. And the bond market itself is also going to do well because there'll be a lot more people trying to tap the bond market, and there'll be a lot more issuances, you know, which is actually good for bond investors. So for that reason, I felt that, you know, with the currency stabilizing, I think the currency levels should stabilize between that 380 to 4 levels, which is now very close to that levels, you know, and that will augur well for the country. And for that reason, I'm bullish, and we are still think that the numbers, the target numbers of hitting 150 billion fund size, we will be able to achieve that.
What about monetary policy? How many rate hikes for next year?
Rate hikes, I think if you look at Bank Negara does not hike rates unnecessarily. I think people are talking about 2 rate hikes in a year, but I think at the most, probably if the numbers remains good, they will opt for 1, and probably later years, 2019 will be the next hike. I think the Fed itself has also, you know, every year they talk about 3-4 rate hikes, you know, and in the end, over the last few years, the number of hikes is lesser than, you know. So the U.S. is also like that, you know. So generally, we feel that inflation is not threatening. So when you look at monetary policy, you don't just look at GDP numbers, you also look at inflation numbers. And under the new normals, inflation is muted, you know. And for that reason, we feel that, you know, probably 1 rate hike will do for the year. And I think because of that, and it's already been mentioned in the last monetary policy, you know, meeting, and that has been factored in. So for that reason, I have no doubt that the bond market is also will continue to do well despite the rate hike that is being mentioned by the central bank.
Dato, it was such a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you so much for your time and your insights there. I've been speaking to Dato Wan Kamaruzaman Wan Ahmad, CEO of Kuap. I'm Tan Chung Han, and this is BFM 89.9.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U-Mobile, where data hearts you.